So we've been speaking with Michael Waheed Hanna, a fellow at the Century Foundation, about the situation in Iraq. But let's cross the border into Syria for a few minutes. Activists and opposition groups yesterday accused Syrian forces of killing at least 160 defecting soldiers and civilians in recent days. It comes in advance of the arrival of the first group of Arab League observers in Syria today to begin monitoring President Bashar al-Assad's implementation of an Arab League plan. We want to explore that with Michael Waheed Hanna from the Century Foundation. How cynical is, I was talking with the drivers yesterday here in New York who was saying, what do you think of that? The Arab League observers are on their way in, and the day before, Bashar al-Assad kills 160 people. Is that a useful way of looking at it?
Well, clearly this is a cynical regime. It's a regime that's willing to kill its people in scores to hold on to power. I don't think it should be a particular shock. Obviously, the timing will strike some as particularly cynical, but it's of a kind with who this regime is. It's a regime that's willing to kill its people to hold on to power.
And it reflects not only on the regime in Damascus, but also on the Arab League. Here's the voice of Radwan Ziadeh, who's a member of the opposition Syrian National Council, speaking to our partner, the BBC.
The violence against the protesters escalating and increasing very dangerously. More 300 have been killed in the last 3 days. The Assad regime did not implement or accept the Arab Initiative. It's true that he signed it, but there is no actions. Only they have a signature on some papers.
Reading between the lines there, it sounds like the opposition in Syria is saying that this Arab League agreement to bring in observers does more to legitimize Bashar al-Assad rather than to open him to scrutiny.
I think that's probably an incorrect reading. It's likely that the Syrian regime will not comply with the terms of the Arab League observer mission. But I think it's a surprise that we've gotten this far. The Arab League was a dormant institution that used to turn its look away from the actions of despots.
And it acted in Libya.
It did act in Libya.
Called for the NATO campaign.
Absolutely. And so this is a continuation of an activism that we've never seen from the Arab League. And so I think we should look at this as a procedural step. If there is to be any further international action with respect to Syria, we are going to have a regional consensus, and it's going to have to go through this Arab League observer mission.
We have a significant challenge trying to figure out what's going on in Syria, as does anyone in the international community. We speak with Anthony Shadid, New York Times bureau chief, but he's in Beirut most of the time observing what's going on there. There's accounts of expatriates, people coming out, refugees coming out. What do you make of the pattern of what appears to be defections from the military in places like Homs, even Hama, some other cities, not so much in Damascus? Is the military becoming increasingly disloyal to the regime?
Well, so there's a Free Syrian Army now. And of course, as with the rest of the story, it's hard to separate fact from fiction and propaganda. There clearly have been defections. There clearly have been incidents of defectors attacking army installations and bases and ambushes. But again, as with the rest of the picture, it's difficult to know exactly what is happening on the ground. We haven't seen top-level defections yet. And so there is some coherence and solidarity still at the top level. And short of a coup, it's hard to imagine anything happening in the near term that would fundamentally change the sort of balance of power in the country.
And the Libyan case, it's difficult to compare, but in the Libyan case at this point, there were high-level defections, and so there were much more visible signs of the regime's crumbling in Libya than there seems to be in Damascus.
Well, and what happened in Libya was that Benghazi was a sort of base for all operations, and it's clear that the Syrian regime has this very much in mind. I think they're quite worried about the notion of a safe area, particularly in the north and perhaps near the Turkish border.
So they're trying to prevent Homs from becoming a Benghazi.
Or even further closer to the Turkish border, a town like Idlib. Some of these attacks have been focused on these areas on the border, areas that have been talked about as perhaps where humanitarian corridors would be located, and a sense that they don't want to see ceding of territory or losing control of an area that would become something akin to what Benghazi was in Libya.
He's been our companion for much of this year, in a remarkable year in the Arab world. Michael Waheed Hanna is a fellow at the Century Foundation. Your reaction, because I thought of you immediately when Barbara Walters interviewed interviewed Bashar al-Assad, that soft-spoken voice, an individual who seemed incredulous that his people wouldn't want to support him. Your reaction to that interview?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't have expected him to say anything else.
Really?
I mean, it would be hard to imagine someone coming on television saying, yes, I'm massacring my own people, and we're going to do this because this is an existential crisis and I have to hold on to power. It's of a kind. If you're willing to kill your people so shamelessly, it's not surprising that you would conduct an interview in this fashion.
You know, for much of this year, in talking about Syria, it was described to us that the example of chaos across the border in Iraq was the ace that Bashar al-Assad had to basically say to his people, sit tight here, do not confront this regime, otherwise you'll end up seeing what happened in Iraq back in 2006, 2007. We were just describing a resurgence in violence in Iraq. Are we seeing a sort of regional chaos developing between these two neighbors, a former Ba'athist regime in Iraq and a current Ba'athist regime in Damascus?
I don't know if I would go that far yet. What I would say is that Iraq clearly had a chilling effect on the region. There was a sense that if this was democracy, then we didn't really want much of that. Clearly, that has been something that the Assad regime has utilized. There are clearly those substantial constituencies in Syria who do worry about what post-Assad Syria would look like and are worried about the potential for sectarian violence and for something perhaps more than that, something that looks more like a sectarian civil war.
We've seen in Yemen and Bahrain, where there were Arab Spring sorts of uprisings throughout this year, and there was a regime change, of course, in Yemen. But that appears to have quieted down in both Bahrain and Yemen because the Saudis are huge interlocutors. There's no similar interlocutor in Syria or Iraq. Would you expect this chaos to grow?
I think so. I mean, I think there's no sort of near-term exit here. All the signs point to increasing violence, perhaps on both sides. And there's a real lack of any international consensus about just what to do with Syria. And much like Iraq, the geopolitical ramifications of what happened in Syria are massive. And nobody wants to take that on. And so, as we see with the Russian and Chinese reluctance to take this issue on head within the Security Council, there are no clear or good options at the moment, and that's hindering any coordinated efforts to seek a way out.
Can we end on an optimistic note? Elections in Egypt, are you optimistic about what's happening there?
Not in the near term, I would say. Egypt is a bit of a mess, as anybody can see. You have rising repression by the military.
And will they give up power?
I think it's going to be a negotiated process. I think the revolution has been diverted in many ways, and many of the core goals haven't been accomplished. I think that much is clear. And the regime is trying to play upon this notion of a silent majority and trying to leverage that support. I think it's a very dangerous policy and very divisive. I think it's not an overall unremittingly bleak picture because there are politics that are happening in the country. But I think our time frames for judging what happens in Egypt have to be expanded a little bit.
And so far in the Arab Spring, we've got Tunisia and Libya and a lot of question marks.
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of question marks going forward. I think this is a process, again, that's going to take years and decades, in fact. And it's a change that had to happen. It was going to happen at some point. Obviously, it's happening across the board in many ways, which heightens the sort of uncertainty involved. But this is something that was going to happen eventually.
Well, happy holidays to you, Michael Waheed Hanna.
Thanks very much.
Fellow at the Century Foundation, talking about the situation in Iraq and broadly the remarkable year in the Middle East in 2011. Join the conversation or any other stories we're talking about this week, 877-8MY-TAKE, or go to thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee is out today. This is The Takeaway. We'll be right back.